This is Night Call, the first and only nationwide listener call-in show on vital issues. Tonight's subject, why was it a cool summer in New York City? Tonight's guest, the Reverend Willie J. Smith, head of New York City's Youth Corps. You speak for yourself and ask your questions directly by calling Collect Night Call's national phone number, area code 212-749-3311, or in the New York area, 866-5010. Night Call's host in New York City is Del Shields.
Good evening. With the exception of isolated minor flare-ups, which certainly couldn't seem minor to the participants at the time, New York City has had a relatively cool summer in the racial issue, or in the racial sense. One of the key people responsible for this coolness in the city that contains America's three largest black ghettos, Harlem, Bedford-Stuyvesant, and the East Bronx, is our guest tonight, the Reverend Willie J. Smith. But in a sublimely illogical twist of irony in these sublimely illogical times, Mr. Smith was also responsible for the one major race rumble the city has had this summer. And to compound the irony, that rumble, a protest, near riot of some 1,500 black youths in front of New York City's hall, City Hall earlier this summer, may have been largely responsible for keeping the city cool for the succeeding months. Mr. Smith is 30. Is paid $18,000 a year by New York City to be the director of its neighborhood youth corps. He is a recent graduate of Union Theological Seminary. After the protest, 9 injured, 9 arrests, Mr. Smith was loudly suspended by the city and then quietly reinstated a week or so later. The protest was for more money, for more summer jobs for ghetto youths. There had been a federal cutback of such funds. The very next day, following the protest, Mayor John Lindsay quickly announced the city itself would appropriate some of the necessary money. There were loud protests from the white community that this was blackmail. The mayor said he'd made the decision before the City Hall demonstration. New York has had a relatively cool summer ever since. Mr. Smith is standing by to answer your questions and share your comments about the many black and white and gray issues involved in how he kept the city cool. You may speak to him direct at our national number, which is area code 212-749-3311. And, of course, you're always welcome to call us collect. That's national calls on area code 212-749-3311. Our listeners in Colorado, Texas, and West Coast listeners only should call us on our Western Regional number, which is area code 212-749-3357. For West Coast calls only, area code 212-749-3357. And in the New York area, you may call us at 866-5010. That's 866-5010. Mr. Smith, good evening, sir.
Good evening. How are you?
Very fine, thank you, and thank you so much for being with us.
Well, it's a pleasure if I can remain comfortable for the next hour, so.
I hope that you can, sir, and I think that you will.
Thank you.
Reverend Smith, is it fair to say that the City Hall protest was a successful blackmail attempt? And can you, as a man of God, a minister, justify this particular means to any end?
Well, I don't know. You covered a whole lot of things there. First, successful blackmail, and then somehow you equate that over against, or equate it with a man of God. How do you proposed to answer a question like that. My feeling is that situation that occurred at City Hall was for money and for jobs, and there's some misunderstanding as to when a decision was made about the jobs, or at least not a misunderstanding, really. Some say that it was already made. Others say that it was made subsequent to the demonstration. I think the chief point, so that you don't get hung up in that, is that the jobs were made available and city monies were made available for summer jobs.
Was it?
I don't
was...
know what that has to do with my man of God character. You know?
Well, can we equate the question this way? Was it a matter of blackmail, or was it a matter of calling attention to a particular problem that needed some kind of redress by the city?
Well, I think it's a matter of concentrated attention. I think the problem was known. Certainly, many people know the complaints the mayor was making to Willard Wirtz about the federal cutback in funds and the impending ensuing disasters in terms of not having jobs for the city. So that the problem was known. I think we simply had to concentrate our effort on intensifying the problem, both for the public and for the city, so that the city itself would make a commitment to alleviate it.
Aware of most of the rhetoric that was offered during the pre-summer months that 1968 was going to see this summer as being one of the most drastic summers and possibly one of the worst summers that America's ever faced in the issue of race relations. And as we review the summer, we find that the country as a whole was relatively quiet, or quiet in the sense that it was not as bad as we thought it was. What was your reaction to the overall calm, not only here in New York, but throughout the country?
Well, I like the word calm as opposed to what you normally hear is a word like cool. Cool implies a kind of buying off process, while calm, I get the distinct feeling of a kind of sanity which pervades summer. Now, my feeling is that there was sanity during the summer, not so much coolness. And the reason for that is that, you know, many of the kids, for example, who come, who have come to my office and who still do and always will, they don't come with the attitude that they want to tear something up or they're going to burn this or do this. You know, what they come and say is that they're out of school and they'd like to have a job for the summer. You see, it's just as simple as that. And that's, you know, although I'm 30 years old, I don't suppose I'm that far removed from that generation. When I was in high school, there were no anti-poverty programs, so we had to go out and wait tables, bus dishes, and everything else. The point was, though, that we were out of school and we wanted a job, you see. And so now, although the anti-poverty program, in my judgment, is sort of the last resort employer, kids are still expecting the same thing we expected, say, 5, 10, 15, 20 years ago, that during the summer months you could earn some money. And I think this is the important thing. Now, this issue gets tied into the on-calm issue, and I think you connect two wrong issues. In the first place, jobs do not solve the summer jobs never solve an employment problem. That thing goes year-round, you see. But the other thing is that if you don't provide some summer jobs, in the normal course of a summer, there can be explosive situation by the mere fact that more people are not employed and therefore have more free time.
Was there more money allocated, or was the budget increased this year as a result of the alarm concerning the summer being a rather long, hot summer?
No. Matter of fact, the opposite happened. I mean, that's the part of the tragedy and irony of this society, I suppose. Last year, we were funded for 23,900 jobs by the federal government. Now, this year, we were funded for 23,900 jobs. But the slip disk logic in it is that there was a differential of about $2 to $3 million. See, so with an additional $2 to $3 million that we were cut back from, it meant that you either had to shorten your program or have fewer jobs for the summer, you see. So that the fact is that we were cut by the federal government.
What about the other agencies? I know you are the director of the New York City's Neighborhood Youth Corps. What about the other agencies involved in New York? Did they contribute in any way to what we would call, quote, the calm of New York during the summer?
Well, I think the Community Development Agency, certainly. I've forgotten now just how many community action programs they developed this summer. I know that some of them were extremely engaging. Centered around cultural history, black cultural history, Puerto Rican cultural history, and around tutorial remediation, recreation, and black arts and the theater. These are very engaging programs, fruitful and productive. And I think because they were engaging, they attracted any number of young people to them. Some of them even put on some productions, like up in the South Bronx, for example. Those programs were helpful. I think there were several. It's just very hard to just single out any one program that deserves perhaps the most credit, but it's the extent to which a program engages people and has some meaning and relevance.
Reverend Smith, we have calls standing by in New York and Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, but just before we go to those calls, my final question, just before our inviting our listeners to participate in our conversation, do you feel that the unfortunate assassination of Senator Kennedy had anything to do with the calm this summer?
I don't know. It's very hard to evaluate that, and I really don't know. It's just difficult for me to say the extent to which the young people, for example, who participate in the Neighborhood Youth Corps are affected by thinking of that tragedy. I think it relates much more to the extent to which government responds to the immediacy of people's needs when they seek a redress of their grievances or when they seek a job for the summer. Now, I think that's much more important. Now, I think New York City, for example, if it had not provided some additional monies for jobs, you know, regardless of whether they were thinking of the tragedy of Senator Kennedy or the tragedy of Martin Luther King, I think those issues may be separate and sort of put to the side in another category. But I think it's the way in which government responds and the haste in which it responds to people's needs that they could get a feeling of that government's concerned, and if you know, and that it does something and that it's responsive. If it doesn't do that, then I think you run into a holocaust.
Tonight on Night Call, our subject, why was it a cool summer in New York City? Our guest calling in from New York, the Reverend Willie J. Smith, the director of New York City's Neighborhood Youth Corps, and we'll take our first caller tonight from Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. Mr. Harvey is hearing Night Call of WBAX in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. Mr. Harvey, good evening, sir.
Good evening. I only had one curious question I did want to ask, was that as far as the summer work for the youths in the New York area, I was wondering why the labor unions, especially the construction workers in this area, that there is so much work available in the New York and New Jersey area for plain laborers, which on a union job, the wage scale is very, very high. And I was wondering why they would have this shortage, why they would have to import people from another state as laborers, you know, with the labor union, with the surplus of people that they have in their own area.
I'm not quite sure that I understand your question. The Youth Corps program does not import. You may be thinking of the migratory farm workers or laborers that come from different parts of the country to work on farms and so on. The Youth Corps employs teenagers primarily, young persons, 16 to 21. They are from the city, they're attending school, and they're out of school for the summer months and seeking employment.
Oh, I see, but I was in the, as far as the construction line, now there is so much, in fact, we're actually shorthanded here. We're trying to import from New York and New Jersey, and by the same token, there are people here that are going to New York and New Jersey for the height of the construction season.
Yeah, but I think what you have to bear in mind is that during the summer, you're flooded with students, high school students, who are seeking summer employment. If you think of the program as students who are out of school, you see, and they're returning to school in the fall. They're simply seeking to work for the summer. Now, probably when you were going to school, it might have been a little different. You probably have to go out and seek your own job for the summer, work in a local drugstore or something of this kind. But New York City is so huge, and there are so many people eligible for jobs that, you know, we have to have something, for example, like Neighborhood Youth Corps that provides jobs and business and industry that provides jobs for a tremendous influx of people on the labor market on a part-time basis.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Harvey, thank you for calling, sir.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. This is Night Call in New York. We'll return to more Night Call listeners right after station identification. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Willie Smith after station identification. America is growing smaller. Speed of communication, speed of travel, and a worldwide revolution in human rights. These things bind us together into a common destiny. One man's problem is every man's problem. More and more we realize the only real problem is the human problem. People who need jobs, better education, better places to live, better medical care, and better hope for the future. A chance to become part of the American dream of freedom and opportunity. But for the American dream to succeed, each of us must be responsive to the needs of others. To give a damn about our brother or our sister, black or white. You'll find some answers to how you can help give a damn, how you can offer your help, in a new booklet called Whose Crisis? Yours. You can get a copy without charge by writing to Night Call, Pomona, New York, zip 10970. That's Night Call, Pomona, P-O-M-O-N-A, New York. Speak for yourself, collect on Night Call, area code 212-749-3311 or 866-5010 to Willie Smith about keeping it cool. Again, Del Shields.
And our next Night Call listener is Mr. Peoples, who is hearing Night Call in New York over WLIB-FM. Mr. Peoples, good evening, sir.
Good evening, Del.
How are you, sir?
I'm all right. I'm finally got in touch with you.
Oh, glad you were patient.
Reverend?
Yes, Mr. Peoples.
Excuse me, what's your last name?
Smith, Willie Smith.
Willie, do you think that the reason why we had a very calm summer, other than, like I know, the Block Association, people are taking more interest in having individual block associations, PAL. But do you think that one of the reasons why we had a calm summer is that private industry is coming in to seek out, to qualify? It's not enough, but a few are coming in and investing time and money in to qualify those who can't qualify, who have dropped out of school. Do you think that's one of the reasons why we have calm?
Well, I think that's one of the reasons why we always have an explosive summer. See, I think it's just the opposite. I think that could be a factor, but my understanding of the jobs provided by private industry, I understood that they were supposed to provide 37,000 jobs under this National Alliance of Business men's program, which was inaugurated from Washington. And so far as I can tell, they only made about 4,000 or 5,000 jobs available. Now, I think if they had provided the 37,000 jobs, that it would have been helpful. But, you know, my feeling about it is that like private industry still is, as much as you hear about it, still aren't with it.
Well, you know what, Reverend Smith, I had experience, and with quite a few others, of one of the private industries coming in with a mobile truck, and supposed to be giving jobs or taking applications, I say, from dropouts, high school dropouts, and no age limit. And but before you get the job, you must take some aptitude tests. And the aptitude test was almost like a college exam.
Yeah.
And they say, well, I'm sorry, but, you know, and they know these people can't pass these tests, you know.
Yeah.
And but they say they're trying to get to the qualified. And I think, you know, they're a joke. But a few of them, they're just not enough. And I just was hoping that private industry will come in, and because next summer might not be so calm.
Yeah, I think the a part of it, and I don't want to get in a long thing because there are a lot of variables in it.
Yeah.
But my general feeling about what you're saying and my position has been, along with several others, that some of these tests ought to be discarded because they are a discriminatory device, and that you should start to work and then get your education and training while you're working, but you're still being paid, you see, rather than have all the screening and the testing and so on prior to going on the job. Go on the job, you know, and get education, paid education, while you're working.
Right.
Mr. Peoples, were you successful in getting a job at all through this mobile unit?
Well, Del, you know, I took the test. I passed the tests, you know, and they wanted my DD-214 papers. Now, I didn't stay in the service my full length of time. And when they seen my DD-214 papers, I got an honorable, but I only stayed in a year. And they told me, well, we'll call you, which I never received the call. I got an answer saying, well, they, you know, reconsidered my application. Even after I passed all the tests. And that's it. I worked for PAL this summer. And believe me, I really did get some kicks, but I wanted to find out who I can go to about this. I passed the tests, and that's what I was required to do to go to school, and nothing happened.
Hmm. Well, I think one of the things you could do is call 433.
Go ahead.
4723.
4723. Yes.
And I think we might be able to run it down a little bit.
Okay.
For you, okay?
Thank you very much. Thank
Mr.
you,
Mr. Peoples, Bob. Thank you for calling.
All right. Good night.
Thank you. This is Night Call in New York tonight. Why was it a cool summer in New York City? And our guest tonight is the Reverend Willie J. Smith, director of New York City's Neighborhood Youth Corps. And, of course, we always welcome your telephone calls. And if you're calling nationally, you may call us at area code 212-749-3311. That's area code 212-749-3311. And, of course, we always welcome your calls collect. And if you're calling out from the West Coast, you may call us at area code 212-749-3357. That's area code 212-749-3357 for our West Coast listeners. We'll take our next call from Boston, Mr. Herb DeJoyer, is hearing Night Call over WBUR. Mr. DeJoyer, good evening, sir.
Hi, Dell.
How are you?
Yeah, I'd like to address a question to Reverend Smith concerning the cool summer in New York. And I'd like to ask him if he thinks that, if he's aware of it, the Vermont-New York Cooperative Interracial Youth Program contributed in any way to the cool summer in New York.
Well, I'm aware of it. That's the youth program, right?
Right.
Was that the youth camping program?
No. It wasn't camping. It was an educational, cultural program. We had about 400 blacks in the state of Vermont this summer.
Yeah, I heard that did a real job up in the state of
Again?
I understand that did a real job. There aren't many blacks in Vermont.
Well, that's it. That's precisely why we brought them up.
Yeah. I'd be much more interested in that program to find out what happened to the whites in Vermont when the blacks were there, rather than, you know, with what happened in New York City. I wonder what happened in Vermont.
Well, it was pretty encouraging, let me tell you. But, I'm really curious. Do you think this had any effect on the cool summer in New York?
I don't know. It'd be difficult for me to gauge. I wouldn't want to speculate because I don't know that much about the program. I would imagine that it would certainly enrich some of the experiences of the people who might have gone on the program. But beyond that, I just don't know.
Yeah, well, we had about 400 or 500 14 to 18-year-olders from Bedford-Stuyvesant, from Harlem, from New Jersey, from Bronx, up in Vermont this summer, in a program which was 50% white, 50% black,
mm-hmm.
and students all of this age engaged in, well, it was a communal living program.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. DeJoyer, what was the reaction of the whites in Vermont to the import of 400 black kids?
Well, at the beginning, let me tell you, it was pretty hectic. In fact, it was pretty hairy. Naturally, the townspeople were a bit afraid of what was happening, but we had a lot of preliminary meetings with the various communities. And, they were a bit hesitant and they were afraid, but we've had such fantastic behavior changes up here that you'd have to be here to believe it.
Well, when you say you had preliminary meetings, what did you tell the people?
Everything. You see, we've tried to play it straight from the beginning. Trust, honesty, kids that we had up here as well as the community, the artificiality of it all, the half black, the half white, came straight from the shoulder.
You know, it's I spent a summer in Vermont.
Uh-huh.
What the devil was that? Waitsfield, Vermont.
Oh, I know Waitsfield very
yeah,
well.
Yeah, up there near Sugar Bush and Glen
yeah,
Ellen.
We're not far from there.
Yeah, and having worked there for a month, I don't see much difference in the emotional development of the kids who were in Vermont compared with those who were in New York. Do you see? As a matter of fact, the kids who were in Vermont in the program traveled a couple of times to New York.
Yeah.
You know, so that it seems to me, you know, what I think what I'm trying to point out is it's not so much the youth that have difficulty overcoming the barriers.
There you go.
It's usually these preliminary people in the meetings of the town hall.
Well, this is
so on. And they're the ones that have the problem. If the kids are left alone, they usually can work things out. But it's the adult, you know, who is sort of like programming their own prejudicial agendas into the kids and around the program.
You know, you hit it right. We had no problem with the kids at all. In fact, the kids were just beautiful. As long as you let the townspeople, you know, they want to know what is happening. And we had some resistance, let me tell you. I don't want to paint it all rosy.
Yeah.
But the kids were just great. As a matter of fact, there's a TV show. We did videotape it over at ETV in Burlington, a panel discussion, and it will be on NET perhaps in the next month or so. And if you get a chance, I think you should look at it.
Okay, thank you. Nice talking to you.
Okay.
Thank you for calling, sir.
All right.
Thank you so much. This is Night Call in New York. Why was it a cool summer in New York City? Our guest, the Reverend Willie J. Smith, director of New York City's Neighborhood Youth Corps. Reverend Smith, we've talked about private industry being interested in making available some jobs for the youth this summer. And as we review this summer, is it not possible that the fact that most of the police departments throughout, well, not only here in New York City, but throughout the country, had taken special training courses and supposedly were better prepared to handle any kind of riot or any kind of demonstration that might have come about, would this have been some deterrent?
Well, God dog it. You know, I look at that and I listen to that, and I think that the forums are useful where you bring people together. For example, there have been a lot of these so-called human relations programs and et cetera. But I think the main thing is more and deeper than that. I think it's the fact that blacks are getting much more organized, and I think that the Puerto Rican communities, for example, throughout New York, are much more organized. Therefore, they present a force which has to be respected, you see. And therefore, you're negotiating and bargaining, you know, whether it's for jobs or housing and so on, takes a different kind of character. And now I think it's impossible for the overt exploitation of blacks and Puerto Ricans, for example, to occur. There's much more political awareness. And with the coming into being of political awareness and political maturity, I think this has a lot to do with the reactions or responses of the police department, responses of government, and the responses of other kinds of bureaucracies. Now, I don't know what kind of training, I just don't know what kind of training the police have undergone. Obviously, they've undergone some. But I think that still there's a heck of a lot that needs to be done. You see, although you may have the training, let me just put it this way, although you may have police training, there still needs to be something to counteract the symbol of oppression. You see, the symbol of oppression, which the policeman represents in communities as an arm of the bureaucracy. You see, an arm of all that which oppresses is the visible symbol. And I think that something has to be done along these lines, too.
Reverend Smith, we will return with more calls from across the nation right after station identification. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Willie Smith after station identification. Next week on Night Call, improving human awareness, black leadership, saving our society, broadcasting in the second American Revolution, and how children learn. Monday, joy, dynamic movement, or phony fad. A look at the new human potential movement with psychologist William Schutz of the Esalen Institute at Big Sur, California. Tuesday, Roy Innes of the Congress for Racial Equality on Has Core Gone Tom? Wednesday, Leon Modeste asks for your suggestions on how black people should spend some of the Episcopalian Church's $9 million they're devoting to locally controlled ghetto projects. Thursday, FCC Commissioner Nicholas Johnson on racial equality, hiring and programming practices. And Friday, author John Holt on how children learn. All this next week on Night Call. Speak for yourself, collect on Night Call, area code 212-749-3311 or 866-5010 to Willie Smith about keeping it cool. Again, Dal Shields.
And as always, we welcome the various Night Call stations across the country who join us for the second half hour. And tonight, why was it a cool summer in New York City? And this is not to indicate in any way that we're only discussing the calm of New York City, wherever you are, wherever you're listening. If you feel inclined to believe that in your particular area that there was a calm this summer and you'd like to offer your ideas and offer your comments or your suggestions in your particular area, as a listener offered in the first half of Night Call tonight, who called in from Vermont and wanted to know if the import of 400 blacks to their particular area might have helped New York City. So we'd like to hear from all of our Night Call listeners across the country in the more than 63 areas where we're here, where we're heard from or where we're listened to each night. Reverend Smith, as we continue tonight on why was it a cool or calm summer in New York City, you mentioned earlier that there seems to be an increasing awareness on the parts of black as well as an increasing awareness on the part of the Spanish-speaking community here in New York, people who are interested in trying to find out some of the problems or trying to find the solutions to some of the problems that face them. Can we digress for just a moment and talk about the poverty program? The poverty program as we know it, was this helpful in any way to the calm of New York City during the summer? Is the poverty program really doing the job?
Well, I don't know how much money the poverty program has in New York City, but poverty program, for example, dollar for dollar, can't do a job. It's hamstrung first by money. It's hamstrung a lot by its own bureaucracy and so on. I think one of the things that it has served as, particularly last year, maybe the year before, much more so than this year, it's had a strong catalytic function. It's been around poverty, anti-poverty programs like small summer programs or community action programs, and now around some of the community corporations that people have learned to organize, you see. And just the mere fact of having a board of directors and having to go through the process of selecting them, you know, whether it's legal or illegal, or whether, you know, some people bring all their friends out to have them vote for them, I mean, that's kind of irrelevant. The point is, you do put people in a position where they can organize. And it seems to me that organization is really the beginning of political maturity, you see. I mean, even you take the Green Amendment, the thing, and some of the other amendments which state that now the poverty programs have to be in some sense controlled by City Hall. That's what it really means. But even prior to that, you see, there were great attempts at organizations which really made it. I don't think blacks, for example, and Puerto Ricans are going to retreat from that organizational stance. I also think that maybe a second thing that's done, and I wouldn't attribute this to the poverty program. I don't think it deserves that much credit. But I would attribute it to the growing awareness from a catalytic function that the poverty program served of a kind of a selective participation in government. By that I mean that when you ask the previous question of, bordering on protest and demonstration, etc., I think that blacks, especially my own position is, we're far, far more mature and therefore much more selective in what we do. I mean, I think that's a great point of strategy. I mean, I don't think we're going to walk into an ambush or walk into a trap or walk out in the middle of the street and get gunned down over whether John Brown's salary ought to be 8.2 or 8.3, see. I think that the choosing of the issues, the clarification of the issues, and so on. And I think a lot of this has come about as a result of the catalytic function of the poverty program, as opposed to its direct function in terms of providing jobs and, you know, and some other things.
Reverend Smith, Mr. George Pearson is hearing Night Call over WTVR in Richmond, Virginia. We'll take his call. Mr. Pearson, good evening, sir.
Yes, sir. How are you doing?
Fine, thank you. Your question?
I would like to ask the question. I'm associate pastor at Highland Methodist Church in Colonial Heights, and we've been studying poverty, and tomorrow morning we're leaving on a spiritual life retreat in which we will look into it more deeply. And I thought that perhaps Mr. Smith could give me some ideas as to how to answer these kids. I'm going to be working with 15, 16, 17-year-olds, and they ask the question. They're truly interested in the problem of poverty, but they want to know, what can we do?
Reverend Pearson, just before Reverend Smith answers, we're going to ask you to hang up because we're having a disturbance on your line, so you listen on your radio, and if you'd like to call us back for an additional response, we'll be happy to accept your call, all right?
All right.
Thank you so much, sir. Mm-hmm. Reverend Smith?
Yes?
Can you answer the question?
Well, I'd have to ask him a couple of questions before. I don't exactly know what he wants in terms of what can kids do about the poverty program, you know, or... obviously, it's tied in with money, you see. Before, when one raised the question of what do you do about poverty, you get these old missionary charity answers of send people in to make people more comfortable and to tell them that their troubles will be over, which was a kind of church eschatology. But I think if one's going to do anything, and if this is a white church particularly, they need to educate the white community, if it's a white church. And by that I mean there must be some kids in the congregation whose fathers, for example, hold positions and corporations and etc. Now, if they around the dinner table and in any other kind of way could convince them to open up the employment and check the personnel department, see how many blacks are in fact working in the company. And now, suppose that is not the case. Suppose they have friends who are influential in labor and in industry, let them just take a friend, you know, and check how many blacks are actually working in that company. Now, I think this could be a real response. That is, whites educating the white community, not necessarily going into the black community, you know, bringing words of wisdom and praise and that type of thing, but stay right in the white community where I think the greatest problem is.
Well, perhaps Reverend Pearson will call us back and we'll be able to get some additional questions from him. In the meantime, Reverend Smith, what is the poverty program supposed to do? The anti-poverty program, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I guess you heard me give a deep sigh when you asked that question. how the hell would you define what the poverty program is supposed to do? I don't know, some say eliminate poverty and et cetera. Let me just take off on I work particularly in the manpower. I work in the manpower agency of the poverty program in New York. And I think that its goal really ought to be empowerment of the person along the lines of economic development. That's my whole thing about the anti-poverty. Empowerment. Now, that's different than saying find the job or go to school or get in a training program. If a program does not empower a person, I don't think it's worth anything. Then someone will say, well, now what do you mean when you talk about empowerment? Well, empowerment is enfranchisement, really. It's to put more dollars into a guy's pocket. It's to lead him or direct him or stimulate him to the point of economic development, that is, ownership of something. And I think if the poverty program can get these kinds of ideas across and dare to risk the monies that go along with it, then I think it's well on its way. But I hook into the economic development and the ownership concept much more than the idea of simply, you know, getting together in various kinds of projects. Now, there's a lot of other smaller, you know, not smaller, I don't mean, but a lot of other specific objectives which the poverty program has, such as it has educational objectives. It certainly has a strong narcotics program, rehabilitation. money is empowerment along the line of economic development and ownership.
With all of the money that's being allocated for the various programs under the anti-poverty banner, and with the many, many skilled people who are involved in these programs, there seems to be something lacking. Now, where is the problem? Is it that the program is not reaching the proper people? Is it the fact that the program is not attracting people who are in need of it? Is it a problem on the managerial level?
Yeah. Well, all of that's a problem. All those things you mentioned is a problem. But I think one of the greatest problems is that the character of funding is the way I put it. The anti-poverty program, I don't know what it is. It comes up once a year, and it exists under some amorphous resolution, and you get refunded every year. And if the character of funding is such that you don't exactly know when you're going to get funded, whether it's going to be November or April, and you've got a number of community organizations submitting proposals to one central agency and trying to do proper prior planning, but they come up with no money, or the money's late. So you have that kind of a funding problem. Now, that means that you have serious programmatic instability, you see. Even if you don't know when you're going to get funded, you automatically have programmatic instability because you can't plan and you don't have things sort of perted out, and you can't follow an organizational chart and a program chart. Another problem, of course, is the cutback of funds. I mean, the poverty, I don't know when the poverty program has received a gracious outpouring of funds from Washington saying, this year we're going to increase you rather than decrease you. So that if you have a tremendous cutback in funds, a nibbling away at the guts of the monies, then you have problems too, because you see, then you're caught up in always having to cut back programs. You start out unstable, and then in the middle of the road, you got to cut back. Now that means that the communities would always be engaged in adjusting, readjusting, on the one hand, and then in some sense fighting on the other, because no program wants to be completely cut out, no matter how gracious the community is, and how gracious the adjacent community is. Each community wants to stay in the anti-poverty program, but now if you're always being cut back, the money has to come out of someplace. So then you develop tremendous resistance within communities, confusion and conflict. And I think this has been part of the history of the program. And I hit the key of it as the funding pattern. Now, there may be other problems, but that's the chief problem.
Reverend Smith, Mr. Peter Wengert, is hearing Night Call here in New York over WRVR-FM. Mr. Wengert, good evening, sir.
Good evening. Reverend Smith,
yes.
I believe that what you've just been saying ties in pretty closely with what I wanted to ask. Given the problems you had this summer in getting enough money, given the fact that the federal government was obviously somewhat remiss in cutting back the way they did, and I think that they were, I watched with considerable interest your tactic, and as a matter of fact, I was a witness of the demonstration in front of City Hall, which worked. What I'm wondering is this. Here you were dealing with students who are around for the summer and who are, in some sense, mobilizable because they're out of school. Do you have any other ways, though, during the year when kids are back in school, of trying to mobilize this kind of support for your effort to gain local funds? And I'm assuming that a good part of your funding will still have to be local in the future. Are you making any plans that you could talk about tonight to attempt to, build up your political support here so that you won't have to resort to that kind of thing in the future?
Well, I don't know how you build political support without people, you know.
I know.
But in terms of, let me just lay it out to you. Yes, we do need local support. Now, some monies have been given by the City of New York for manpower training programs. But the problem of a program like Neighborhood Youth Corps or like Shorier is critical in this area. It's a wage program, you see, or you may call it a stipend program, but it's not a stipend, it's really a wage.
Mm-hmm.
So anytime you get a program that has a wage attached to it, it's much, much more difficult to get it funded because it's costly.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You see. Uh-huh. Now, if you simply had to develop training programs and not pay kids any wages at all and say, look, man, now you go down to 1195 Fulton Avenue or RUAC or MFY and you stay there 6 hours a day and get some training and, you know, then you get your basic education corresponding to that training and you will place you on a job, you can get money like that. I mean, you could get money from foundations, you can get some city money and so on. But the problem with that is it never works.
Mm-hmm.
Because most of the kids in our program, you know, I mean, some of them from broken homes, a lot of the cats, you know, they don't have any money, they're supporting families, so they can't afford to be in any kind of training program without a stipend. I mean, that's just out of the question.
I agree with you.
Because they're heads of households.
Mm-hmm.
All right, now.
Reverend Smith, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to interrupt for station identification. Mr. Wingate, if you'd like to hold on, you may.
Thank you very much.
Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Willie Smith after station identification. Monday night on Night Call, joy, dynamic movement, or phony fad? A network of visionaries at work across our country is convincing people by the thousands that human nature has been sold short. The Human Potential Movement includes businessmen, psychologists, professors, dancers, and theologians. They all agree that there is much more to life than most of us live, and that the world need not be as hypocritical, absurd, and polluted as it is. One of the founders of the movement is psychologist William Schutz. His book, Joy, Expanding Human Awareness, is the result of the work he's done at the Esalen Institute at Big Sur, California. Dr. Schutz is our guest. Joy, Dynamic Movement, or Phony Fad is our subject. Monday night on Night Call, the first and only nationwide call-in show on vital issues. Speak for yourself, collect on Night Call, area code 212-749-3311 or 866-5010 to Willie Smith about keeping it cool. Again, Del Shields.
Reverend Smith, our apology for having to interrupt you, but you may proceed.
Fine. If I might say one thing, I think you've posed the problem very well here. But now what I'm wondering is this. You, after all, are in your position beyond the summer.
Yeah.
Are you taking steps now to try to assure that, as a matter of fact, you will be better received, more cordially received as the year goes along so that we don't have to... if you like, take these stopgap last-moment measures to achieve
that. Yeah, well, I think what I'm going to do for the next 2 weeks, I'm going to sit down and write some letters to all the members of the city council and to the mayor's staff and to the borough president, encouraging them to seek judgeships so that we can run the city ourselves.
If I can be of any assistance to you on that.
Yeah, I'll call on you.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Wingate, thank you for calling, sir. This is Night Call in New York, and tonight, why was it a cool summer in New York City? And, of course, we always invite your comments, too, as to what took place in your particular area. If you had a program or you experienced a program in your area where it was rather cool, we certainly would like to hear from you. Our national telephone number is area code 212-749-3311. And remember, you may call us collect, and out on the West Coast, we'd like to hear from our West Coast listeners. We don't want you to be left out of the Night Call program. So the special number for you is area code 212-749-3357. Our next caller, Reverend Smith, comes from Seattle, Washington. Mr. Richard Murray is hearing Night Call over KUOW. Mr. Murray, good evening, sir.
Well, good evening. My question for Reverend Smith would be relative to the quiet that seemed to be all over the nation, not just in New York. And I thought that perhaps because of the anticipation of trouble in Chicago, with the spotlight on Chicago, the trouble elsewhere would have been just more or less anticlimactic, because they were anticipating, you know, such a disruption of the convention, probably a sit-in, and all sorts of demonstrations to just more or less create havoc with that convention. And,
yep.
And I just wondered what if that didn't have a tremendous effect on keeping it quiet elsewhere.
Well, you know, that convention situation was near the end of the summer. I think what the convention situation shows you is that it's not really quiet. It's a kind of seething hostility being held in abeyance. while people regroup, recollect their thoughts and feelings and watch to see what happens. Now, Chicago was a great instance at simply the occasion of which all of this hostility broke through. Do you see? Now, that hostility is in Seattle, Washington, New York City, Chicago, and every place else. But I think for the moment, a lot of people are simply watching to see what happens in the future, and you know, in politics, in the cities, with the federal government, and et cetera. My feeling is that with the conservative mood that I pick up in the country, that things might get a lot worse before they get any better.
Well, for this summer, do you suppose it was because all the organization was directed towards Chicago?
Well, I don't think anything was directed towards Chicago. I think Chicago, I don't think Chicago needs that kind of an excuse to show that kind of brutality as far as blacks would be concerned. But what happened at Chicago is that white people recognize that the hostility that whites feel toward blacks can also be turned in on itself and turned toward whites. Because if you looked at Chicago, most of the people out there marching that were being beaten primarily were whites, and most of the policemen there were primarily white. And that ought to be an indication of the way in which hatred and rage can really turn in on itself. It wasn't that many blacks involved in that Chicago situation outside. Now, they were a lot inside in terms of the political arena, but not outside.
Well, in Seattle here, we had kind of a reverse of the situation where they were harassing in the central area. They were harassing the Teamsters, and so the Teamsters Union were going to boycott the central area and not make deliveries because they're harassing the drivers and...
Mr. Murray, when you say they, who are the they?
Well, the Negroes in the central area, the certain gangs, you see.
And they were harassing the Teamsters?
Yes, the truck drivers that would make deliveries in the central area, which is our Negro district.
For what reason?
Well, just to cause trouble, I suppose.
Well, I don't know, Dad. You know...
And it got so bad. See, it was kind of an organized thing, and it got so bad that the Teamsters, in order to protect their drivers, were going to stop deliveries in the central area. But then they had a big meeting in the central area, and kind of things kind of calmed down because there were some cooler heads prevailed.
Well, were the blacks asking for jobs, or were they asking for an improvement in conditions in some way? It doesn't seem likely that people would begin.
It's pretty hard to break into unions.
So they were protesting the union situation.
In a large part, I suppose, but yet you couldn't hardly. It wouldn't seem to tie in directly, because you can't be robbing a truck and protesting at the same time. You see.
Well, you know, there's an easy way to solve that problem. It's not that easy, but if blacks were driving those trucks, I'll bet you there wouldn't be that much harassment.
Mm-hmm. And perhaps this is what they hope to affect by that.
Well, perhaps that's what you ought to start working on. Find out how many blacks are driving the trucks from the Teamsters Union that come out of that black community. I think you ought to do a little research on that, and it may be alarming to you. Because it certainly wouldn't surprise me. I'll bet you that there's probably fewer than 1 out of 100.
Mr. Murray, thank you for calling, sir.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. This is Night Call in New York, and tonight as we continue to talk about the calm in New York and across the country, we will take our next call from Richmond, Virginia. Miss Eubank is hearing Night Call of WTVR. Miss Eubank, good evening.
Hello, Mr. Shields.
How are you?
I want to thank you for your program. I've been wishing we had a night program here in Richmond for a very long time, and I'm very grateful that this one has been put on. I do want to talk briefly about the poverty program. I actually don't know too much about the program, but all I know about it is what I read in the paper, and I hear so much propaganda against the poverty program. There have been built up a great amount of anti-government feeling in the South, and I understand it's even worse for further south than Richmond. There's organized propaganda, there's organized letter writing campaigns to congressmen, and this is why the poverty program doesn't get enough money to operate. And just recently now, there was a program here in Richmond at a rescue squad building. There was a program aimed against the poverty program, and it was put on by a local front group, but actually it was put on by the John Birch Society. And when you have an organization that spends millions of dollars annually on propaganda against the government, against the poverty program, against the Supreme Court, and against so much that is American, that is a good part of America, you can't be surprised that the program doesn't get the finances it needs, particularly when we have so many congressmen from the South who still don't remember that they are there to represent all of the people. They seem to think they are there to represent the white power structure, and they just will not recognize that they are in Congress to represent all the people. They take an oath to support the Constitution, and in supporting the Constitution, they're supposed to represent all the people. If we could just get good congressmen, we would have a better program. We would have better programs throughout the United States. I believe that.
I think you put it very well.
That's the main things I wanted to get across, and I do want to thank you for the program.
Ms. Eubank, thank you so much for calling, and
we're
grateful
sir.
To be in Richmond, Virginia. Thank you so much. We've come to that point in our show where we are unable to take any more calls, and while Reverend Smith is collecting his thoughts for closing comment, we'd like to remind you that we welcome your telephone calls, and of course, if you can't get through to us, it's only because there are about 63 stations that carry night call each night, and if we can't get through to you, you can always feel free to address us a note, and you may drop us a note at Night Call in Pomona. That's P-O-M-O-N-A, New York, zip code 10970. That's Night Call, Pomona, New York, zip code 10970. If you have a question, we'll be more than happy to answer it, and if you'd like for us to direct your question to one of our guests, we'll be happy to do that too. Reverend Smith, we have talked briefly tonight about the calm in New York City, and we touched very lightly on the situation throughout the country, and we've heard a great deal of discussion about the poverty program, or I should say the anti-poverty program. We didn't get into all of the things that we would like to, but I'd just like to throw two questions at you and perhaps allow you about a minute and a half to give us some kind of response. Is it possible that the anti-poverty program is tied in with the Biafran situation in any way? And number two, is it also true that the anti-poverty program attracts a number of political people who kind of use it as a stepping stone for other jobs, and is this one of the reasons why the anti-poverty program is not more effective?
Yeah, let me take the last question first, because I think that's one of the most discouraging things about the anti-poverty program, especially here in New York. You know, we get a lot of sometimes good men in very high positions in the anti-poverty program. But man, you know, like, they're gone in 6 months. You shape policies for programs. They're gone in a year. And I know it's the same case with city government. You attract some good guys, and they use it, use the position sometimes as a mere stepping stone. I don't mean to discourage people escalating to higher positions. But one of the things I would like to see, for example, in New York City's anti-poverty program, the Human Resources Administration, that anybody that makes over X number of dollars, which could be set at a later time, make a commitment of 2 years or 2.5 years to the program, not simply to come into the anti-poverty program and leave and go someplace else. It's phenomenal the amount of turnover that we have in New York City's anti-poverty program, and of course, New York City's government. How you solve that, I don't know, but I do think some kind of long-standing commitment ought to be made by high officials in the anti-poverty program. The second.
Reverend Smith, I'm sorry, I won't have time for the second question, and please forgive us, but we want to thank you so much for being with us tonight on Night Call, and good luck to you and the Neighborhood Youth Corps.
Thank you, it's a pleasure.
Thank you so much. Our guest tonight, Reverend Willie Smith, who is director of the New York City Neighborhood Youth Corps. This is Del Shields in New York, and just to remind you that on Monday, our guest will be psychologist William Schutz of the Institute out of California. We'll be talking about his book called Joy. This is Del Shields in New York. Good night and peace. Have a pleasant weekend.
Night Call, the first and only nationwide listener call-in show on vital issues. Monday night, same time, same station. Joy, dynamic movement or phony fad? With one of the founders of the human potential movement, Dr. William Schutz of the Esalen Institute, Big Sur, California. Listen Monday night. Discuss freely and responsibly your own personal opinions. Speak for yourself on Night Call. produced by the United Methodist Church, presented with National Council of Churches, National Catholic Office for Radio and Television, American Jewish Committee, and Urban Coalition.